Healthy attraction to others comes from a healthy attraction to ourselves. I'm Alex Orlando. I help people transform, and this is Dating and Authenticity.
Hello, everybody. This is Frankie, and we have Alex here. How you doing, Alex?
Yeah, really good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I am super excited to hear what you have to say about this topic. I know it's a really good one, and one that attraction, it's a little bit, sometimes it can be out of our reach, and sometimes it's up in our face.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why don't you just tell us what you got to say about it?
So when I initially suggested this topic last week, I don't think I realized just how much of a mountain I was creating for myself, both in terms of research, in terms of life experience to draw upon, and just condensing it into a relatable and understandable topic. But nevertheless, it's been fascinating. And I think that this could be an episode that's done 1,000 times. And the reason I say that is attraction is fascinating. But attraction is fascinating because it's one of those things that the more we know, the more we realize we don't understand it. And as we were saying just before we jumped on air, in 1,000 years time, we won't understand it anymore. There'll still be people that are really attractive and we don't understand why. And there'll still be people that seem like they should be attractive, but people aren't attracted to. It's huge. And understanding it just takes so much time and is completely beyond all comprehension and probably always will be. But just to begin with, I'll tell a little story that just illustrates exactly what I've just discussed then. So we are going to flash back to 2013. And at this particular point, I am doing an internship working up in central London. And this really was a time in my life where I had done a lot of work on making myself as physically attractive as I possibly could. So, you know, a lot of time in the gym. My hair was really well styled and really well cut. I was spending a lot of money on clothes. And I really got myself to a point where it was almost like a checklist. And in terms of feeling attractive and looking attractive, I felt like I ticked off every single box. So I'm in a team meeting during this internship. And it's really, really interesting. So the plan for the day is being briefed. And the manager says that there's going to be a particular male client that's coming into the office on that day. And the minute this guy's name is mentioned, every single woman in the room becomes unbelievably thirsty. The body language changes, the demeanor changes, and it's almost like this man is a celebrity, and they're all instantly talking about how physically attractive he is, how funny he is, how hot he is, how sexy he is. And this isn't a particular demographic of women. This is women aged between about 24 and 45. So the day kind of progresses, and I tell you, 1 in 3 conversations between every single woman in the office relates to the fact that this guy is coming in. And to be honest, like, even I'm beginning to get a bit nervous about him coming in, because I'm thinking, well, who's this celebrity going to be? And I'm imagining like a Brad Pitt style jawline, you know, like a George Clooney smile, a Captain America style body, you know, everything you could possibly want. You know, the day progresses, and about 3:30, I think, wow, I need to step up. So I'm in the gents' toilets, and I'm, you know, puffing my chest out. I'm restyling my hair because I think, you know, we're going competition. If this guy's hot, I'm going to see what I can do. So day carries on, and there's more and more talk about how attractive he is. And about 3:45, the women are all having a really healthy argument as to who's going to be the one that makes him tea when he arrives, who's going to be the one that lets the door in, who's going to be the one that takes the meeting. If he goes over to the coffee machine and he wants a coffee, who's going to be the person that shows him how to use the coffee? Crazy. Just an absolutely crazy experience. So 4:00, he arrives, and there's nobody there to greet him because all the women are in the toilet freshening themselves up for his arrival. So I answer the door and he comes in, and I'm very, very surprised by what I see. The guy's about 5'8", 5'9", average height. His hair's going grey, not in a George Clooney style way, but more in a I can't be bothered to dye it kind of way. He's not got a Captain America style body. He's more, slightly more dad bod, if we're being entirely honest. You know, not fat at all, but just a normal guy. He comes in, there's no Hollywood smile, there's no chiseled jawline. He just has a very normal, approachable face. And he's been there for about 30 seconds. And then instantly there's about 7 women all coming over with a cup of tea for him. Someone's trying to march him to the meeting room. And as they're walking over, they're giggling at every word that he's saying. people are talking about how hot and how sexy he looks that day. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm standing here with my perfectly fitting polo shirt, you know, looking great, my hair perfectly styled. And this guy's come in and he's a completely different look. And he's having this effect on these women. What is going on? I cannot understand this. So being a little bit jealous, I'm sitting outside the meeting room trying to work out what he's saying that's having such an effect. And all I can hear is just giggle after giggle after giggle after giggle. And it's not making any sense to me. So he walks out, he leaves, everybody says goodbye to him. As he leaves, you know, you see these women just touching their hearts like, oh, I wish I could find a man like that. And I'm thinking, I'm right here, but nobody's seeing that at all. So he leaves, and then I find myself even more completely bemused by what it means to be attractive, completely confused by what I've just witnessed. So at the time, I felt a bit disappointed, but now I look back and I think, wow, that is completely liberating. Attraction doesn't necessarily have to mean that you reach a certain standard. Attraction doesn't necessarily mean that you have to look like Captain America. Attraction just means that you're attractive. And I say that, and it sounds so basic to say attraction just means that you're attractive. But what we lose sight of with all this talk, and particularly in modern society, because modern society is about really high standards and being the best version of you, which there's absolutely merit to. But what it really reinforces is that attraction is a feeling. Attraction is something that you feel when you look at somebody. And this is why it's such a fascinating topic, because you can try and replicate something. You can try and be something. But if somebody doesn't feel that attraction when they look at you, that's not going to change.
I'm intrigued to know who this person is.
So am I.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it makes a lot of sense. You know, when you think about, oh, okay, that didn't work, or that doesn't work, or, you know, and we're always left in this inquiry of what do I have to do?
Yeah.
Who do I have to be?
But what is great about being left in that state of inquiry is, for me now, you know, as a coach, working with guys, working with women that don't necessarily see themselves as being attractive, what I can really reinforce is that, you know, attraction doesn't have to mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean that you have to be this. It doesn't mean that you have to be that. It just means that, you know, people will feel it when they look at you, and you can't try and be something that cultivates that feeling. It's about being the best version of you. And I think that what we're going to talk about a lot today is really going to reinforce, it's going to be about three things, really. So the first thing that we'll talk about will be attraction in the dating world. So that will be a lot of the things that you'd expect to come up. Then we're going to talk about attraction to yourself. And then we're going to talk about the darker side of attraction, which is incidentally another really, really fascinating topic too.
Excellent. Okay. Well, why don't you just go ahead and let's talk about it all.
So I love my research. And on a topic like this, I love my research even more because it's fascinating. But the research that I've really done indicates that there's six things that will equate to attractiveness. And this is going to be the same for both men and women. So before we look at what's different between the two genders, we're now just going to look at what's going to be similar and what's going to be an overlap. So we'll get the elephant out of the room straight away. Physical attractiveness will play a part, and all things being equal, it's going to be a deciding factor in potential partners. But people misunderstand physical attractiveness, because physical attractiveness works in trends. So if you were to ask 500 people what is attractive, you would see certain statistical trends, just as you would with anything. So it doesn't necessarily mean that one thing is better than another thing. It doesn't mean that something is inferior in relation to something else. What it just means is there are trends. This will be liked, this will be liked, and this will be liked. Three completely different things that will, you know, three very different things, but they'll still be found as attractive as each other. And a really, really interesting differentiation to make now is the difference between how men look at physical attraction and women look at physical attraction. So the first thing to say is when a man sees somebody that he's attracted to, he'll think they're hot. And then after that, he'll begin to try and determine what their personality is like or what this person's like. When a woman thinks somebody is hot, she will think they're hot, but she cannot make the differentiation between somebody being hot without trying to understand who they are as a person. So somebody can be super physically attractive, but if the way they look doesn't align to how a woman would like a person that would like that person's personality to be, they won't be considered attractive, regardless of whether that person is stunning. Whereas for a man, it's just straight up visual. Yes, they're attractive. Let's see what they're like. For a woman, it's they may be physically attractive, but what are they like as a person? What do they stand for? Who are they? And this is interesting because this backs up something that we talk about a lot in terms of women's intuition. And I'm sure you've had that experience, Frankie, where you've been somewhere and there's been a woman that every single man fancies, but none of the women like. And it's because men have just gone straight to the visual. She's hot. Nothing else matters. Whereas the women are trying to make up calculated decisions as to what this person is like. And not just saying that, you know, they are attractive. It's much more about understanding the person as a holistic person rather than just as an item for objectification.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing is financial stability. So this is where we get into the hypergamy narrative, which I absolutely cannot stand and think has absolutely no place in dating. But we're going to look at it now in terms of financial stability, meaning do you have regular money coming in? Do you have a place to live? And can you manage that money? If you have those three things in check, you are financially stable. What it really means too is that if you're the type of person that worries about not earning enough money, or you're the type of person that thinks that you have to have a certain amount of money in order for people to be attracted to you, it is worth disconnecting yourself from that narrative and disconnecting yourself away from those people. Because being financially stable is what will matter. It's not how much money you have, it's how you manage that money, which will make a difference. Next up is going to be emotional intelligence. So this one is one I think a lot of people think that they have, but it's not necessarily one that they all have. So by emotional intelligence, what I really mean is, have you got your shit together? Do you know who you are, and are you comfortable with who you are? And can you show that? Can you convey that? And can you make yourself relatable and likable when you meet people? So, you know, everybody's going to have a past, absolutely undeniable, but can you manage your past so it doesn't impact on your future? Can you manage your past so you don't push people away? Or can you empathize with people? Can you connect with people? It's that type of emotional intelligence. And a lot of men, and I see this quite frequently, men will think to themselves, you know, I'm successful at work. I'm a manager. I'm emotionally intelligent. And it doesn't mean that at all. Emotional intelligence is about how you relate to people on a one-on-one level.
Hmm.
Next up is going to be sense of humor. I mean, I'm sure everybody would have expected sense of humor to come in there. You know, it's undeniable. When you're funny, people like you. Laughter is the universal sign of bonding. If you make people laugh, it's a sign they want to bond with you. Humor is always going to be in there in terms of attractiveness. Next up, we have intelligence. So intelligence you can really define in several different ways. You can look at it from a very quantifiable level. So in terms of how well educated someone is, how high up in someone's career they are. But really, for me, intelligence in the world of dating is much more about how you show it. So things like storytelling are really good examples of intelligence, because you're showing that you can see detail and then you're showing that you can articulate detail. Things like public speaking are really good measures of intelligence, because you're showing that you can articulate yourself. Intelligence really is about showing it and articulating it and conveying it, and not necessarily showing that, you know, yes, I've got this degree, or yes, I've got this job. I mean, sure, that's a factor, but it's not going to make somebody feel attraction to you because of that. It's just going to be a measure that you use to show that you have that. And lastly, we have honesty. So you can look at honesty in several different levels. So one will be, you know, you hear those sort of stereotypical kind of examples of men that say that they're working late when they're really going to go out with their friends, or men that say that they're busy, you know, too busy to take a woman out on the date because they want to go to a sports game with their buddies. You know, that is a form of honesty, and that is a form of, you know, we know those types of lies are not going to make somebody attracted to them at all. But honesty is also about, are you honest with yourself? Are you comfortable with who you are? Can you convey who you are in a way that feels authentic and real to you, rather than just, you know, rather than just being what society tells you to be, or rather than being what you feel like you should be in order to impress people? We're looking at honesty in terms of, are you honest with who you are, and do you show that honesty of who you are with other people too?
Well, this is really interesting. When you were talking, I had so many comments about each one, and what I'm left with is that if these things, and there's just no way that we can all at once have all these like running 100% of the time. I mean,
no,
you know,
of course
something,
not.
It's something to definitely strive for, and part of our own personal development as we evolve and as our relationships evolve, right? So
absolutely.
I'm also hearing, like, if you don't, we're constantly communicating, even though we're not speaking it. So it could be with how we're walking, or, you know, how, you know, the intonation of our voice. And if we, I'll just pick one, like financial stability, if we don't have that handled and we're having a conversation in the back of our head of, I'm not successful, I'm not there yet, etc., then the other person is, you know, in a sublime way picking up that communication, and that interferes with the attraction.
Well, I mean, let's just think of going back to the story that I told at the start with the guy that I just couldn't understand why people were so attracted to him. We have this guy that's obviously very comfortable with who he is, very good with people, you know, and he's probably engaging with women on a day-to-day basis, showing that he is honest about who he is, showing emotional intelligence, showing a sense of humor. So of course people would be attracted to him. Whereas me, at the point that I was at then, I was doing all of these things for the approval of other people. And the last one that I touched on just there was honesty. There's no honesty in behind what I was doing at that point. There was no honesty in me being who I was. So, you know, I instantly did not have any of those things down. I might have had the physical attractiveness down, but at the end of the day, that's never going to be enough. And at the end of the day, that's never, ever going to be a deciding factor that really hooks people beyond an initial, you know, beyond an initial door opening period.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, being in the entertainment business and just in life, you know, I've met stunning people, both men and women. And I can tell you that within a very short amount of time, like seconds almost, you can really see what that person's about, and you can, you know, it's pretty transparent. And people will be even more attractive or completely unattractive based on that. There have been people that are really successful, and then you get to know them, or you get to spend a little bit of time with them. I'm talking about work and the entertainment industry, and you can see why, you know. I'm sure this man that you were talking about had that. And I'm curious if you were to look back and see what was it that had him have these women be so responsive to him with what because physical attraction, you know, was could or could not be there depending on what kind of people you like. But what do you think he had going for him in with, you know, going over the list of things that he just made?
Well, I can say straight away that he wasn't one of the higher earning clients there. So before people think that it was a status thing and say that women were attracted to him because of his status, it wasn't that. You know, he was not a highly wealth, you know, a highly sought after client. He was very, very low level. So it wasn't going to be the financial stability. I mean, the physical attractiveness one you can absolutely debate, because I don't know if you remember this several years ago, Frankie, but around about sort of 2015, there was a sudden push when Leonardo DiCaprio was seen on the beach, and he had what was kind of seen as the first dad bod. And suddenly there was this sudden phase that a lot of women had where they were like, oh, we don't want abs. We don't want a guy with a six pack. The dad bod is so much more attractive. So physical attractiveness is a hard one, because, you know, you can never find a one size fits all approach. And the interesting thing too with physical attractiveness is how we perceive ourselves will play a massive part in that. So women, for example, will often say that a taller man is more attractive, but a woman who's 5 foot is going to have a very different idea of what tall is to a woman who's 5'11", if you see what I mean. So when we're talking about a group of women finding someone attractive, height won't be a factor, because it's going to be different and it's going to be relatable to different people. So when I think of that guy now, the thing that I really come back to is probably the honesty. And I think about my men's mindset too, because again, I've touched on this before, the human mind wants to benchmark. And we obviously, of course, we compare ourselves to other people because we don't necessarily understand where we fit within something in the world. So I was comparing myself to this guy based on who was taller, who was more muscular, who had better hair, who was better dressed. And that sort of stuff is just meaningless, because that's me looking for my own objective benchmarks, which of course doesn't mean anything. Like, this is my standard. This is my self-created standards. And just because I have them, it doesn't mean that other people will have them too. You know, the definition of attraction is simply a quality or feature that evokes interest, like, or desire. So I'm thinking there was just something about this guy when he came in that evoked interest, that evoked like, and evoked desire. So, you know, if someone is honest and someone is comfortable with who they are, that's a likable trait. If someone shows intelligence, that's a desirable trait. And if, you know, if someone shows a sense of humor, that's going to be attractive. It's just one of those unanimous things. So I would suspect it's probably that. And these are obviously things that I, as a completely heterosexual man, can't see when I look at another man. I'm not going to feel those things. So of course I'm going to go to the objective thing. But by going to objective, it means nothing, because this is my benchmarks. And it doesn't mean that anybody else is going to follow those benchmarks. And obviously, as we saw in the story that I gave, not a single woman in the room cared about the benchmarks that I'd set at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I mean, it wasn't great for you, but it's great for you now.
Yeah, now it's great. And you know, I hear a lot of narrative from men about not being tall enough or losing their hair or not being muscular enough or whatever. And it just, when I hear stories like that and I think of stories like that, it's so empowering for those guys to think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the way that you think it does. You know, we spoke about the six characteristics and you made the point that not everybody's going to have all of them. So this is what I really come back to now about be attracted to yourself. Enjoy the process of being you. Focus on being you. Focus on enjoying being you. And, you know, and if you're leaning into skills that you do have, like if you are a funny guy, you're going to feel good when you make people laugh. If you're an emotionally intelligent guy, you're going to feel fantastic when you engage in these deep conversations with people, when you really connect with people. You know, and if you are intelligent, you're going to feel great when you're sharing, you know, stories about world events, you're talking about what you think of certain things. So it's really just about leaning into what you have, because once you start leaning into what you have, you're going to enjoy the process so much more. And we always talk about dating being fun. We always talk about forming connections from who you are. And we talk about being authentic to yourself. If you're leaning into what you've got, you're being that attractive version of yourself that you enjoy being. Of course, other people will be attracted to you because they'll play off it. They'll see it. And the things that you thought mattered and the things that you placed a lot of time on will just not matter in the same way that they did before.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I was dating somebody who, well, he was just a friend, like a longtime friend. And we started hanging out and I was not physically attracted to him. I mean, he's a good looking guy. He was tall and dark and handsome. We'll just say that. And I have a very specific type of humor. You know, I grew up in a very urban environment. And so certain things to me are funny. And he grew up in that same environment. And when he would talk about those things or make jokes about them, I would just belly laugh. And and that relatedness and that understanding and his ability to make me laugh in a way and about things that no one else really could or were very few and far between had me feel attracted to him. And then
I can completely see that. And the reason that I say that is because for women, a lot of attraction is about what they feel in the story. And I can see how the two of you with this same sense of humor probably felt like you were in a little world where the two of you truly understood each other. And I can appreciate how you would be drawn to that. And I can appreciate how you would look at somebody that had that and think, yeah, that's attractive. That's really, really attractive. It's almost like you're living in this private world and you're away from other things because the two of you are kind of connecting a lot more.
Right. It was almost irreverent. And, you know, if people were to overhear that conversation, they would think you guys are messed up. Like you guys are kind of not okay to be laughing at those types of things. And so it is very specific to, you know, each person, a one-on-one basis. And then there's people, you know, I've had the experience of walking in a room and just like being kind of hit between both eyes and turning around because I can't bear it, you know. So there's all sides of it.
Yeah, and of course, and I guess this is obviously going to link into your, I suppose, what we've spoken about before, but your identity, your story, and how that's shaping what you're attracted to too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, that probably, I'll tell a little story of my own now, which will segue nicely onto the next thing that we're going to talk about, but it's going to link into what you just said as well.
Okay.
So whenever, you know, as I know you know as a coach, when you're a coach, you do a lot of your own reflections and you start to think a lot about how what you learn has affected who you are, and you start to see parallels with clients that you work with, and your research leads you to, you know, to discover things about yourself. But when I was doing this topic, and I know we touched on this in my creation call that we had on Wednesday, I was very much thinking about how my personal growth, my personal journey has really led me to be attracted to what I was attracted to, and how at the time I didn't recognize it, I didn't register it, and I didn't see it. But looking back now, it makes absolute sense as to why I was attracted to the people that I was attracted to. So again, we're going to take it back, but this time we're going to go back to when I was between the ages of about 18 to 25, when essentially every single person that I dated, every relationship that I was in really followed a very, very similar path. So when I was 18 years old, I had, you know, we've spoken about this before, I didn't have a lot of self-confidence. I'd had very little interaction with the opposite sex. you know, I'd been to an all boys school and I'd led a pretty sheltered life. So I was at a point where I was really just craving that validation. And I was at a point where I was really just craving being told that I was desirable and craving being told that I was attractive. So for a solid period of about 7 years, I would be attracted to the same type of girl. And the theme that this type of girl would have would be, they didn't have a lot of confidence either, but they'd also had a slightly broken relationship before. You know, they'd been with a guy that didn't necessarily make them feel good. They'd possibly been cheated on, you know, these types of issues too. So I would gravitate towards them because I would feel good around them. We'd feel relatable. And also they would gravitate towards me because I represented a nice guy. You know, I didn't have the confidence that to come across as the type of guy that would ever stray. I seemed very different to other men, probably because I was a lot shyer and a lot quieter. So we'd almost get into this, basically every relationship almost was like a cycle. They'd be attracted to me and they'd be attracted to me, and that would make me feel good. The relationship would carry on. And gradually as the relationship carried on, they would pass out, you know, they would pass on a lot of stories about their past. They pass on a lot of stories about how their ex-boyfriend had cheated them and how that had made them feel. And it would almost just carry on a loop. And it even got to a point where I can remember when I was about 19, 20, when I'd been on about 7 dates with this girl, and I went round her house and she burst into tears about an hour into the date. And I was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, why do you feel like that? Thinking that she was going to talk about something that happened at work, or thinking to talk about how she had an argument with one of her friends. Instead, she was in floods of tears because she found out that her ex-boyfriend had given his new girlfriend a necklace. And I spent hours comforting her, telling her that it was going to be okay, telling her that she was worthwhile, telling her that she was amazing. And I now just look back and I can just see that this was a cycle. And the reason this cycle was happening and why I was constantly attracted to the same type of person and why they were attracted to me was because we had these feelings about ourselves. We had these feelings about where we stood in the world, and we were just gravitating towards each other. And then I think about what happened after that. So now I'm about 25. And this is when I've done a lot of work on making myself feel better. You know, I talk about using an external to fix an internal. So I have a lack of self-confidence, don't feel attractive. So I spend more time working on feeling more attractive. So, you know, I'm going to the gym a lot more. I'm looking better. So I get to about 25 and I start using dating apps. And it turns out that there are women in the world that do find me attractive. But at the same time, I'm also dealing with this kind of void, because I don't feel any different towards myself. I'm just projecting something different out in the world. But now, not only do I not feel any different about myself, I've now got this kind of almost fear of women, because I feel that every woman is going to unburden their ex-boyfriend on me. So I suddenly out of nowhere go for this woman who is not my usual, you know, not my usual match at all. She's very, you know, she's a teacher, so she's very caring, she's very supportive, and she's very nurturing. So we start a relationship, and it's almost like we go into this new dynamic where she, obviously being a nurturing, caring person, wants to have a relationship where she can give that nurture and give that care. So she's attracted to me because I'm someone that she can do that with. And I'm attracted to her because she suddenly represents the stability that I've not had from my previous relationships too. Mm. So you can see how that dynamic has shifted. So then this relationship starts, and it doesn't feel right either, because I'm still not in the relationship for the right reason. The two of us aren't attracted to each other for the right reason. So of course that relationship then ends. So now flash forward to where I'm at now, and I start to think about the types of women that are attracted to me now, and they're very, very different from that, because, you know, I would describe myself as, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I'm completely comfortable being single. You know, I've done a lot of work, I've done a lot of personal development, I understand myself a lot more, but I'm also a lot more open to the possibilities in the world. So now I'm attracting women that feel the same way, that see me in the same way, that see the world in the same way, see life in the same way. And it's just a complete mirror opposite from the type of girls that were attracted to me when I was 18. And it's just so interesting how, you know, people say that opposites attract. And on one hand, you may see that, you know, it's quite common to see an extroverted woman dating a more introverted guy. It's quite often to see someone who's very intelligent dating someone who seems a little bit more fluffy. But I think that that's just the outward projection, because I firmly believe, I see it with clients and the research firmly supports, like attracts like. And how we feel about ourselves is what we put out in the world. So what we put out in the world is going to be what attracts people. So I was putting out this type of energy, and these people were reacting to it because that was the energy that I was putting out. And it's just really, really interesting to think of it like that. And this is why I talk a lot with clients about, it's about getting them to a point where they're comfortable with who they are. You know, and I spoke on the start with the six characteristics, and I said about emotional intelligence being, have you dealt with your baggage? Have you dealt with your shit? And that becomes so key, because it's only once you've done that that you actually start attracting people from a more authentic place, and you won't be leaning into these stories, these narratives that you have about yourself, which will be determining what you're attracting.
Sure. excuse me, there's a lot there. I mean, you know, you said something about mirroring the polar opposite, but I think that you were mirroring exactly where you were. You know, so, and because you've, you know, transformed and you're the polar opposite of where you were back in those days, you're attracting different people and you're attracted to different people. So that makes a lot of sense. And so the whole concept of, you know, being attracted to yourself and why we attract, like the darker side of attraction,
side of attraction.
Right. And so if you have those dark unhealed traumas for whatever reason, why is it that someone, you know, that looks like you and works really hard at your physical appearance, you know, still has this experience of not being attractive to people? What, like, why? And and then to actually do the work in that and then have your life transform. So
well, let's take that concept just a little bit deeper now, and I'm going to introduce you to something called attachment theory, which was introduced in the late 50s by John Bowlby. I don't know if that's something that you're familiar with or something that you've heard of before, but essentially it looks at how our relationship with our primary caregiver really affects how we deal with the stresses in the world. So obviously we're talking about dating, and when you're dating in a relationship, that involves intimacy, that involves being vulnerability, that involves being open. And obviously that is a stress, like that is a huge stress. So there's four different styles of attachment. First one is secure, second one is anxious, third one is avoidant, and the fourth one is fearful. So I talk a lot about with my clients about getting them to the point where the attraction is coming from an adult to adult perspective. So what I mean, you know, like I've said, shit in the past is dealt with. You're comfortable with who you are and you're enjoying being who you are. And then you have two people. So you have two people that are both in that same boat. They'll come together. A relationship will form and it will be secure. The attachment style will be secure because both people are comfortable with where they're at in life. So the purpose of what we're going to talk about a little bit now will be the anxious and avoidant, because these are two that I see so commonly in the dating world. And they're two that really do break up a lot of relationships. So people with an anxious attachment style, these are the type of people that need validation constantly because they worry that it will be taken away. So these will be people that will worry if you don't message back quick enough. These will be people that need to be told that they're attractive. These will be people that will sometimes even ask if they're attractive. People often that will sometimes post photos of themselves for social media for likes. Really, it's just about needing consistent validation reinforced because they're anxious that that will be taken away. They're anxious that their attractiveness will be taken away, but they also don't feel safe that their love or their desirability will always be there. And often when they're dating people, they constantly need to check in. They constantly need to message. And it's really, really key to say now that this is usually from the off. This isn't something that develops. This is usually from the off. And this is something that tends to happen from the off no matter who they're dating. So it's almost like, I don't like the term needy, because the term needy can be defined in a whole different senses. And often at times it's understandable why someone is needy, but this is like a level of neediness that's beginning on a slightly heightened level from the beginning. And really it's because they're more fearful of the rejection than anything else. They're almost more fearful of the rejection than actually losing the person. And this is because they have an anxious attachment style. And then the other one is an avoidant attachment style. So these are the people that cannot form meaningful connections. Often they're people that drink a lot to avoid it. They're often people that do drugs to avoid it. They're often like, they're your stereotypical players. So they're the guys that sleep around a lot because they, rather than, it's almost the type of people that you would look at and they would say they are keeping their distance because they don't want to be hurt. So they often, they'll stay away because they don't feel that people will love them. And rather than wanting to face up to that, it's easier just to not let people in. So really it's about managing your emotional safety by keeping distance. And it's really interesting because both of these attachment styles will play out completely differently. They both come from the same place. And really essentially it's because it stems down to both of these attachment styles are ways of dealing with the same issue. And that issue is a lack of self-love and a lack of attraction towards yourself. And it's interesting because if you have two people with an anxious attachment style, what you'll find out is that it's usually very intense from the beginning. And I talk a lot about ulterior transactions. So you might have a transaction between two people with an anxious attachment style where one person says, "You're beautiful," and then the other person says, "You're beautiful" back. And on one hand, it sounds like these are two people complimenting each other. But what it really is someone saying, "I'm telling you you're beautiful because I need you to tell me that I'm beautiful in return." And obviously, mm-hmm. of course, that's not healthy. And what happens when you have two people who come together and are attracted to each other with an anxious attachment style is usually one person shifts and then develops an avoidant attachment style, usually because it's so hard for that person to deal with. You know, that the constant need from one person usually means that just because relationships, you know, can only have a certain amount of intensity, rather than staying at that level, one person just shifts and takes on an avoidant attachment style. And linking in with that too, you'll never have two people with an avoidant attachment styles together, because essentially they're both spending their time avoiding intimacy. They're both spending their time avoiding vulnerability. So there's absolutely no basis for that to start, because it's two people trying to keep each other at an arm's distance and not even wanting to be near each other. But I bring this in and I segue this in because I'm, you know, this is really a reinforcement of the darker side of attraction. This is why often we are attracted to people, because we see them as being something that can reinforce our own needs within ourselves. We're often attracted to people because it's about what they can do for us and not because we actually want or we actually desire that person. You know, there's plenty of anecdotal evidence of this. And, you know, there's the classic stories where you hear of people that have bad relationships with their parents being desperate for love and, you know, all these kinds of real psychological stuff that's really spoken about a lot. But it's fascinating, because it's about understanding who you are. And when you begin to understand who you are and recognize that you do have some of these traits, this is really the basis for when you can actually look at what it will mean to be attracted to somebody else. Because, like we say, attraction is a feeling. And if you're not feeling that towards yourself, it's going to be so hard to feel that towards somebody else. And if you're not even really sure how to feel it, often you will be drawn and you will be gravitating towards these quite, I don't want to say toxic, because again, as I said, it's an overused word, but you'll be going towards these slightly false ulterior relationships, which aren't what you think they are. And, you know, when I spoke about what was happening for me between 18 to 25, that's exactly what it was. You know, I was stuck in an anxious attachment style, desperate to have myself validated. And you saw the path that took me. Like, it just did not work. It absolutely did not work at all. So it's really key to understand how we are so impacted by what we're attracted to. But it's also really key to understand that just because we're attracted to something, it doesn't mean that it's right for us.
Right. Yeah, a couple things. One is that, you know, when we finally feel attracted to somebody, we think it's the greatest thing ever, right? Mm. You know, because, you know, it's a great thing, but it's not always a great thing. And when you're in touch with yourself and you understand and you have that attraction to yourself and you're in a place of being solid, you can actually choose. You actually have choice in the matter of, yeah, this person, you know, brought something up inside of me and I feel a connection, but what is that connection? Is it good for me? Mm. Is it good for them? Is this good for us? And actually have some choice. And I'm curious to know, like, you said the anxious is, well, all of these were, the attachment theory was connected to our primary, like our parents, right? Is that
our primary caregiver? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what was it that made you anxious? I mean, you know, I know that you have great relationship with your parents and all that, but if you were to identify something that might have been the source of that, what do you think that might be?
You know, I think at that period in my life, I was really struggling with my own identity. And I think there were several contributing factors. So I think, you know, one of the very basic one was just not having exposure to women. And like I always say to my male clients, get better with women by talking to women, you know, have female friends, you know, talk to women on a day-to-day basis, become comfortable with that. And that's a really, really good bedrock to start. And of course, I didn't have that. I didn't have that in place at all. So I was creating almost a narrative in my head as to what I thought women were like and what I thought women would want. And then the other thing too is that I was dealing with, you know, I've spoken about coming from a religious family, and I felt quite a lot of shame for that, because I didn't necessarily see myself as living the life that my parents would want me to. I didn't necessarily see myself as being the type of son that my parents would want, because I didn't fully agree with what they thought, you know, life was like. And then lastly, and I think this is a route for a lot of men, and this will be something that we actually talk about next week. I wasn't in touch with my masculinity. And by that, what I mean is I definitely was in no way, shape or form an alpha male at all, but I just hadn't figured out what it was like to be a man. And I hadn't really figured even like, let alone figuring out what it was like to be a man. I hadn't even figured out what it was like to be Alex. So rather than trying to figure that out and do the work on myself, I thought easiest thing to do, you know, let's have it reinforced. Let's have it validated. Let's have somebody tell me that I'm good enough, because I wasn't able to figure that out for myself.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, you know, we had some awesome questions come in this week from our listeners. So let's just jump into that.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, here's a good one. It kind of ties into what we were talking about. Is it true that women decide within the first 7 seconds of meeting a man whether or not they are interested or attracted to them? I've read this in many dating and self-help books.
So my first question to this is, you know, you're talking about physical attractiveness. And I think both men and women will decide in that period of time whether they find somebody physically nice to look at. You know, in the same way that when you're driving and you're taking in your surroundings, subconsciously you'll decide whether they're nice to look at or whether they're not nice to look at. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're, you know, making any more of a calculated decision than that. It's just something that you have awareness to. And I think on an initial level, an attraction is a form of awareness. But what he's referencing in this question with the 7 seconds, I actually know the root of that. And that stems from the book, The Game, which is well over 15 years old now, or coming on to about 15 years old. And that's something that's spoken about in that. And I absolutely completely disagree with this, because this is something that you'll hear from the very dated sort of pickup world, the very, very dated world of trying to be an alpha male. You know, there's lots of videos online about a woman will decide within a minute whether she thinks you're an alpha. A woman will decide within this period of time whether she wants to sleep with you. The answer to that is absolutely not. And the reason you can see that is just go out into a shopping mall and look at women that you would deem to be really physically attractive and look at the men that they're dating. Not every single one of those men is going to look like Brad Pitt. Not every single one of those men is going to look like Christian Bale or an American Psycho. These will be normal men that are neither unattractive nor attractive. They are just, you know, guys that are perfectly acceptable, perfectly average looking, and an attraction has built and an attraction has grown from them. And you'll also see the same with guys that are below average looking too. You know, we spoke about the 6 characteristics earlier that make someone attractive. You know, it absolutely is not the case that a woman will decide within that period of time. And even if she does decide that you're not attractive, or even if she doesn't have an opinion on the way you look, an attraction can still absolutely grow from there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and, you know, just personally speaking, and, well, from experiences with me and my friends, sometimes you look at somebody and you say, yeah, you know, I am attracted to that person. And as women, but that we know that's not all it is. We're so interested in connecting and all the other things that we want to get out of a relationship. So, 7 second rule. Okay. He's hot. Yeah. I'm attracted to him, but that doesn't, when you're attracted to somebody, that doesn't mean that there is a really deep attraction there for some other reason.
I mean, in the world of psychology, and particularly in the world of neurolinguistic programming, we have what's known as heuristics. And I've touched on this before, but heuristics are rules of thumb that we have in order to make, to basically go by our life, to go about living our lives in the easiest possible way. And one of the things that heuristics have is for decision making. So there are probably heuristic tendencies that we have to decide if someone is attractive within that period of time. But that means firstly that it can be changed because it's such a quick judgment. And also it means that it's something that's instinctive. It doesn't mean that it's something that we've gone to a calculated decision to make. And instincts change. Instincts exist for your survival, but it doesn't mean that an instinct is right.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely. You know, and what I would say to this guy is, you know, don't freak out. It, you know, like it's 7 seconds. Like, you know, when you meet somebody, just like be willing to be vulnerable and just let it go however it needs to go for however long it needs to go. Don't have it in your head.
What I would say from the coaching perspective is, do you know one thing that's not attractive? Being desperate for approval. And if you're desperate for approval within 7 seconds, that's going to push people away, because you're going to make people feel uncomfortable, because you're going to make them feel like there's an expectation from them to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Awesome. Well, let's hear something, because someone actually sent in, they recorded themselves and sent themselves in. So let's hear it.
Why do women always want men to accept them for their flaws, but absolutely refuse to accept men for their flaws?
Wow, absolutely. Whoa.
Oh, yeah, that's a powerful question. So this is one I have to address from a coaching perspective. I don't want to give a deeper answer to, because it's there's so many things within there. But my first thing that I'm thinking is define flaws. You know, what does a flaw mean? Does a flaw mean that you're ugly? Does a flaw mean that other people will look at you as ugly? Or from the coaching perspective, and this is what I'm hearing from this question, this guy has a degree of feeling that he is flawed. You know, he feels that something about him is flawed, and he feels that women won't accept him for that. So I feel that this is a question asked based purely out of interpretation. You know, a question that is based purely out of, you know, a lack of experience possibly, and just a reinforced, almost like, it's like we talk about, you know, we talk about entitlement a lot, and we talk about how men in particular are very guilty of entitlement. So what I'm hearing from this is he feels everything else in his life is in check, and he therefore feels that because that's the case, he's now entitled to a high quality of woman, or he's entitled to what he deems to be a high quality of woman. But what he's actually experiencing isn't that people are seeing him like that. And then he's going to, it must be because of this about me, it must be because of that about me. And he's seeing that it's this one particular flaw, which is why people don't want to date him. I would look at it from the perspective of more that this is probably a reflection of a wider issue. This is probably a reflection of a projection that you're putting out in the world. And this is also probably for me, when I hear this question, there is an element of shame being thrown towards women. You know, there's an element of why are men prepared to do this when women aren't? I would ask the asker of this question to look at their relationship with women, actually consider what it actually means to them. Because if I feel like there's a mind shift switch that needs to be made, I feel like there's a connection that needs to be made with women. Because again, like I said in the last question, you can go out in the real world and you can see plenty of men that are flawed with attractive girlfriends. You can see plenty of men that are flawed that are married with families and living a great life. So I don't agree with that question at all. And I think it's really about self-reflection and looking at your relationship with women.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he's looking at his flaws, it's guaranteed that he's going to point out whoever he's with those flaws in the other person, because that's actually what he's looking for. He has an awareness about flaws, almost a hyper awareness, because he's like, absolutely, they will not. And, he may think, I don't know, his little kind of snaggly tooth is a flaw, and a woman can see it and go, that is the cutest thing I've ever seen. Like, I love that about him. And so if he's not really clear about that, he's not flawed, and that people come with different variations of themselves that bring character and uniqueness to someone else that is going to just love those things about them, he's going to really be setting himself up over and over for massive disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And let's think of, so men have a real anxiety about losing their hair. And I've really seen this week, because I've actually been, again, linking into the topic of attractiveness. There's a lot of talk from men that say, I've lost my hair, women will never fancy me, I'm bald, right? So, you know, there's a process that men go through when they lose their hair around accepting the fact that they are bald. And I would imagine that this feels like a huge problem. This feels like something that changes and challenges and means that they have to reacclimatize and adapt their identity to being something completely new. But there is a wealth of anecdotal evidence, celebrity evidence, real world evidence, however you want to look at it, that shows that some women are really attracted to bald men. So what you feel may be your biggest flaw, possibly maybe your biggest strength to somebody else.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear, a woman had a question. This is very interesting. Let's hear this.
My question about attraction specifically is focused on dental hygiene and bad breath. I want to know why more people don't take care of their mouth.
So that's a really, really simple question. I can answer that in two different ways. So first of all, it's a blind spot. So you don't smell your own breath. You don't realize what your breath smells like. You don't even often see your teeth, because unless you're in the mirror looking at your smile, it's probably very rare that you actually ever have any idea of what your teeth look like. And there's a lot of research that shows that when we look at ourselves in the mirror, we automatically go to our best poses, we go to our best positions, we go to places in our house where the lighting is the best, because we want to see ourselves in the best possible light. And this usually comes up in the topic when people say, why do I look better in real life than I do in pictures? And often it's because people know where they want to look their best. So they go to the best mirror in their house and they go to their best angles. So if you are subconsciously aware that you don't have good teeth, you'll probably, when you're looking in the mirror, won't smile. You won't show your teeth. You'll kind of pretend that it's there. So it will become a blind spot and something that you're not aware of. And the other thing too is that, I can remember being at a personal development workshop at the start of the year. And I was sitting chatting to this guy, really interesting life story, really interesting outlook. And then he was at that point sitting maybe three chairs away from me. And then when more people were filling up the room, he came and he sat next to me. And the minute he started talking, I realized that his breath was horrible. And what this really shows is just that we don't have awareness to these things, because I'm willing to bet that if you told someone that they had bad breath, had bad teeth, whatever it was, they would book an appointment with the dentist within the next 24 hours, because no one wants to have any of those things. So for me, this question really just comes down to people having a lack of self-awareness, because firstly, it's something that's actually pretty hard to have awareness to. And secondly, it's also when we go about our lives trying to make ourselves feel good, we focus on much bigger things. And something like your teeth or your dental hygiene feels a lot smaller in relation to other things as well.
Mm. So important though, for a lot of different reasons, but I don't know. I'm kind of one of those people where if there's something going on with me, I'm like, please tell me. Okay. Don't let me walk around, with something in my teeth or with, just if it's I'm having that negative effect on you. Tell me.
But I mean, it's quite hard feedback to give somebody, isn't it? Oh, by the way, your breath smells. Oh, by the way, you've got horrible teeth. Your teeth are dirty. They need to clean. Like, it's a hard bit of feedback to give somebody.
Well, you could do it in a caring way. So I encourage this woman to say, to kind of get the courage to just like have compassion for other people and kind of say, I know this is sensitive, but how about a mint? Something
or however you phrase it.
That person should call you. That's all I have to say. Well, on that note, I mean, God, time is just raced by, but I wanted to allow people the opportunity, like our callers, other people that sent in these questions, to get a hold of you at alexorlando.coach, and you're still doing your 30-minute consultation, yes?
I am indeed, yep.
Okay, that's a great thing. I know that people that have taken advantage of that I've sent to you have been very, very pleased, even just that first consultation, on how quickly they got to have insights on things.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we talking about next week?
So next week, we're going to talk about the impact of masculine and feminine in the world of dating, in the world of relationships. So we're going to look at a lot of this. We're going to look at a lot of things that exist. But this is a really interesting topic, and I actually decided to do this because I was reading some anecdotal evidence that actually shows that in more matriarchal cultures, so cultures where they're more female dominant, women are more prone to promiscuous behavior, which is just a really, really interesting idea. A really, really interesting idea. And it will challenge a lot of men, because a lot of men will see it the opposite way and think that female empowerment equals less sex, or female empowerment means that they're going to have less connection with women. But what it really means is something completely different. So we're going to take a deep dive into masculine versus feminine in the world of psychology, because it's a huge topic. It's a huge, huge, huge topic. And I'm surprised when I work with clients just how warped a lot of their perceptions are of the opposite gender.
I love this topic. I studied, my major is cultural anthropology, and there are definitely like communities and cities and places in the world where women they're in charge, they're the government, they're everything, and I don't know that it's promiscuous, but they definitely, they have different husbands or partners, right? So they'll have, and these men, they're the caretakers. They're the, you know, they stay home with the children and stuff. And so women will have multiple fathers for their children. And then they're the ones out running their communities. So I think it's fascinating.
I mean, promiscuous was the word that was used in my article. I mean, even just the use of the word promiscuous is a debate as to whether that's even a thing that really should be a word that should even be used nowadays. But
right.
It's just very interesting looking at our masculine and feminine energy that we're putting out in the world. And it's fascinating to even define what feminine energy is and what masculine energy is now too.
Right. And there's a lot of work on these topics in the dating world that I have, you know, during my single, you know, when I got my divorce and I was like, okay, I'm going to really find out everything I need to find out. And I'm going to do it right. And I surrender. I don't know everything. And it was so external based, like, and I didn't understand how to integrate that into who I was as a person. And I just got to the point where I was like, this is just too hard. Like, how do it was a technique to get something as opposed to having who you are and then having that match.
Masculine and feminine is about defining what masculine, you know, for me as a man, being masculine is about defining what being masculine means to me. It doesn't matter what it means to other people. It's about what it means to me and how I choose to show that.
Right, for sure. What do you want to leave your listeners with this week?
I think I was really just reflecting when I was going through this about how, you know, life is constantly throwing different periods of life at you. Life is constantly throwing new challenges at you, and we are constantly adapting. But I think when I look back at where I was at when I was a lot younger, or where I look back at where I was at during the kind of growth to the point that I'm getting at, it just struck me that the important thing is to connect with who you are and what you want. And I would encourage listeners to think about that, because it's a society nowadays doesn't want that to be the case. Society nowadays is about, you know, external validation, external gratification. And it's those things that really do make it harder to be attracted to yourself. It's those things that make it a lot harder to be attracted to who you are. So you're told that you want something, you're told that you should have something. So, you know, the next time you get that feeling of I need this or I need to have that, just challenge it and just think about whether it's actually something that you truly want and truly need, and just challenge yourself to think whether it's actually something that's going to bring you further happiness in the long run too.
That's great. All right. Well, we will be back next Sunday at 10 a.m. Malibu time and 6 p.m. London time.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Have a great week. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.